What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, Paradoxical Vocal Cord Disorder. Our guest this week is Myra Reed. She is an athletic trainer at Manville High School, went to West Texas University, and then UT Chattanooga. And Kathy Shupa is here, also representing Methodist Hospital, our partner in sports medicine. And she said she rescued Myra from down in the valley. And so Myra also wanted to tell that she has two small children and she's having a knee surgery coming up this month just for the fun of it. And so Kathy decided she couldn't let Myra feel alone, so she showed up here wearing a walking boot, and we've been having a good time there. So Kathy has been a guest on here before. I'm Jeremy Jackson, your host, and again, this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/PVCD for paradoxical vocal cord disorder. So PVCD. Without much further ado, we're going to get right to Myra's presentation. So Myra, why don't you get us started?
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. And thank you, Jeremy, for inviting me to this broadcasting today. And thank you, Kathy, for being on my side, my right, left-hand side. So today I'm going to be speaking about paradoxical vocal cord dysfunction, also known as PVCD. It is a breathing disorder that participates in audible vocal stridor during inhalation. So you're going to be hearing a different kind of breathing sound whenever a person with vocal cord dysfunction is having difficulty breathing. It's sometimes confused with asthma. It has some similar symptoms. Although the two may have similar symptoms and triggers, there are very different treatment protocols for the two. So this discussion, I will help educate those who are not familiar with VCD. So first of all, I always like to start off with the anatomy, just so that we can get a clear picture of what we're working with. The vocal cords are basically two bands of elastic muscle tissue located side by side in the larynx, just above the trachea. So when you are silent, the vocal cords remain open and creating an airway through which you breathe. And when you speak, the vocal cords actually close, causing a vibration for a faster pitch, a high pitch, or even a low sound pitch. So when you're talking, they vibrate, creating that sound. And when you're breathing, they remain open. Another part of the anatomy just to be aware of is that your vocal cords are actually just slightly above the trachea. So there's going to be those two bands parallel right to each other, just to be familiar with where they're located. Do know that the vocal cords are actually surrounded by muscles. So there's plenty of muscles in the area to be able to open and close these vocal cords whenever you're breathing and whenever you're speaking. So do know that there's a lot involved as well. There are some variations between the male and female vocal cords. With the adult male, there's going to be a lower pitched due to the vocal cords being longer and thicker. And they range from 1.75 centimeters and 2.5 centimeters in length. Now with the female, they're shorter and thinner. They're going to be at 1.25 centimeters and 1.75 centimeters in length. So between the two, they're either going to be long or short, thin or thick, and creating this different sounds that male versus females have. And then with children, of course, they're going to be a little smaller in range. Do know that the differences are going to be the vocal pitch. So with the male, it's going to be very low and deep and having that scary sound at times. And then with the female vocal cords, they're going to have very soft spoken pitch, having that sweet sound. And then for children, it's just going to range from different sounds when they speak. So what is PVCD? Like I mentioned in my introduction, basically it's just a disorder when you're breathing. There's going to be a stridor during that process. It's more of a vocal growl. It's a little different sound if you haven't heard it. I do have a link to be able to hear that different sound. It's going to be very unique, kind of scary at first, but this is a sound that you have to be very familiar with in order to differentiate between asthma and vocal cord dysfunction. There's different sounds to it. So, Jeremy, if we can play that real quick and we can hear that sound so that we can be familiar with it, it's going to sound a little different. So there you go. Hearing that, basically that they're struggling to breathe in. The chest is going to rise and they're just going to have that difficult grasping for that air. So the difference for asthmatic students or athletes, they're going to have trouble breathing out. So that's the difference in versus out. So being familiar with stridor, that vocal growl, you're going to know that difference of trying to breathe in. Now, the athlete will be able to speak at that time. It's just the difficulty of being able to breathe in. I do have...
All right, so Mara, I got a question.
Yes.
You have on here that it's frequently misdiagnosed as asthma. Are you going to continue talking about the differences and how we can tell the difference as athletic trainers?
Yes, I am. So other symptoms to be familiar with, again, the difficulty in breathing. There's going to be more tightness in the throat and in the chest. There's going to be a narrowing of the glottis because, one, you're having difficulty. There's probably going to be some swelling. There's going to be tightness in the upper body, in the neck, in the shoulders, and even in the face. There's going to be a dry cough involved as well. Only because, you know, it's going to keep getting dry while they're trying to breathe in. And then they're going to have that voice change. So that voice change can consist of that hoarseness voice. Like if you were sick, you can hear that breaky type of voice. So you can be familiar with that as well. It's, again, like I've mentioned, there are some similar symptoms related to asthmatic, but the main focus here is the stridor. And also that there are going to be different types of treatments for the two. You can see PVCD in children, in adolescents, and also in adults.
And again, it's easy to Google or YouTube a video on stridor, so you can kind of continue to hear that or check back with that. It's also in the show notes. Her whole PowerPoint will be available with this episode, and so there's the link there, or you can YouTube it for stridor, S-T-R-I-D-O-R.
Correct. Okay, so what happens again during vocal cord dysfunction? Normally, the vocal cords are going to sit over the airway at the voice box or larynx. They're going to remain open when you take a deep breath. Then the vocal cords close and vibrate over the airway to make that sound when you're talking. So when as I speak now, my vocal cords are actually touching and vibrating. So if I'm just sitting here breathing, they're going to remain open. And a lot of times when you have this disorder, you're going to have one or two of the vocal cords damaged, creating that stridor sound. It's going to remain open either halfway or one's going to be open, the other one's going to be closed. So that's why you have to be very familiar with the symptoms so that you exactly know what's causing this stridor sound. You'll notice that the person has a sudden onset of these symptoms like trouble breathing and wheezing when inhaling. So at that time, you really want to make sure, hey, you know, are you asthmatic? Are you sick? Have you had these symptoms before? So just kind of be familiar with their background. Again, the person will be unable to speak or speak only with a hoarse voice. Since the vocal cords are closed over the airway, asthma patients or athletes, their inhalers are not going to work. Because the person may find that, you know, they can sit down, take slow breaths, but the medication will not work if you have a vocal cord dysfunction.
So, Myra, no, I don't have it. I'm just hoarse today. So my question is, you know, I've heard this presentation quite a bit, uh-huh. And it's something I'd never heard of until you gave this presentation for our staff. Do you routinely use a pulseometer to make sure that it's on your asthma kids, or do you use it on all of your athletes to see what the O2 level is as a differential to make sure, as a baseline on, what you're looking at for your athletes? Now that we've recognized that we have this vocal cord dysfunction among our athletic population.
Yes, we do have some available, and we do apply it to their index finger. Mm-hmm. And at that time, when they're having that difficulty breathing, we want to make sure that they're having enough oxygen in. Obviously, if you have a vocal cord dysfunction athlete versus an asthmatic athlete, the vocal cord dysfunction athlete, they're going to be able to breathe in. They're going to have difficulties, breathing in. So they are going to be having oxygen levels. They're going to be remaining in between the 90 and the 100 versus the asthmatic athletes. Theirs are going to drop because they're having that the lack of air in their lungs. So it's going to drop. So those are the difference between the two. So we always have that in handy.
What is the usual recovery time for a kid that has or an athlete that has a vocal cord dysfunction for them to recover? Now that you've seen it more, mm-hmm. Asthmatic, it can be whenever the medication is in place, but is it just a matter of, are you going to get this later in your presentation?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Okay, so I do want to talk a little bit more about what causes paradoxical vocal cord dysfunction. Research has shown that there's stress and emotions involved, some panic, maybe anxiety attack disorders that can play a huge role and trigger vocal cord dysfunction. I do have an athlete in the past, back in 2009. She's a 15-year-old female, ran cross country. She was having difficulty breathing. She was diagnosed with exercise-induced asthma when she was in middle school. So as a sophomore running cross country, she was having many problems. The first episode was she couldn't breathe. She was having chest pains. She just couldn't run anymore, to the point where she was just so stressed about it. She did have two ER visits because of it, and the asthma medication just wasn't working. So I referred her back to her pediatrician and just to get evaluated. So they just changed the medication, for example, from albuterol to ProAir, and it just was not working. So after many trials of this incident, this episode, we were all stressed out. We just didn't know what else to do. But finally, we referred her to an ENT, ear, nose, and throat physician, where they actually did a nasal endoscopy, which is a small camera at the end of a tube that is inserted through the nose all the way through the back of your throat to be able to see the vocal cords. So that was a success. She was diagnosed with vocal cord dysfunction. So she came back and said, hey, we figured it out. Here are my breathing exercises that I have to do throughout the day. So the physician withdrew the asthma medication only because it wasn't working. So that was the problem. She did not have asthma. So a lot of times they're misdiagnosed. And again, you have to really be aware of the symptoms of the athlete so you can further do the evaluation and refer them to the proper physicians to do evaluations. So with her issue, I'm glad that it was resolved, but it was a lengthy process. It was stressful for her, for myself. The second incident was...
I got a quick question on
yes.
that one. You said you referred them to an ENT. How does that work? Because obviously... that should come from a doctor, right?
Yes.
So talk just a little bit more about that process of maybe that first doctor isn't doing enough, or how did you work that out?
The first time she was diagnosed with exercise-induced asthma back when she was in middle school, she had told me that she was still having problems, but she wasn't competing like she was in high school. High school's a little bit more aggressive in competition, more of the running. So that's when all of her symptoms came about and started triggering. I'm having difficulty breathing. I'm having pain in my chest and so forth. So at that time, it was all about, we had so many incidents. Her asthma medication wasn't working. So we referred her back to her pediatrician. And you know, that's when they changed the medication from her asthma medication to a different one. So, and you know, doctors are going to try different things. So we found out that that was still not working. So it came to a point where like, okay, let's just figure something else out. If your pediatrician is changing your medication and it's just not working for you, we need to take another different step. And that's when ENT came up. It had to do with insurance too, why the lengthy process took a long time. So we were able to find someone for her through her insurance with an ENT. And that's when they took a next step and did the nasal endoscopy. And that's when they found out, oh, well, you have some vocal cord damage. That's why you're having breathing difficulties. Let's try this. So with her breathing treatment exercises that she brought to me, we were doing them twice a day. Especially when she would run, she knew to stop and do her breathing exercise, which I'll go over a little bit more during the presentation. And that helped. She was happy. She was able to continue with her running. Although we did take some time off, but we came to a conclusion. So it's all about trying different methods and helping someone out. If this didn't work, let's try something else.
Because I can see it easily being a situation where it's like, I don't know what else to do. I mean, I'm sending you to a doctor. That's what they're trained to do. So, Kathy?
I would say that the process would be obviously whatever the insurance is. But the recommendation, you know, from the athletic trainer is if you find and you document that their O2 level is, you know, staying within normal, but they're having, you can document you hear a stridor. You communicate with the physician, the parent, and recommend an ENT, and, you know, that's all. But, you know, and as I think that the communication with the parent is especially important, and document the things that Myra has talked about, and the asthma medication is not making a difference as far as that, and help with, you know, finding a physician that was on their insurance. That goes a long way with that, because after I heard Myra give this presentation in 2009, is that what it was?
Yes.
Several athletes that I have worked with since then fell into this category, and I would have not known about this as well. And as I've been out here in Pasadena, and this has come up in the situation where we've looked at one athlete as well. So I think it's just very important that it's more knowledge that we can use. And, you know, it's not seen often. And to provide that information to a PCP, I think it would be very valuable. And then let them, obviously, make them like the decision for the referral. But as long as we can communicate that and document what we're seeing in the field would be the most value.
Right. I had another athlete in 2012. She came to me, another female, she came to me with her physical, and she said, I have VCD. Here are the exercises that I do on a regular basis. And I just want to let you know, give you the heads up that when I run and I'm having difficulty breathing, don't worry, I got this. So that was easy for me. I'm like, oh, well, I know about VCD, and I'm glad that you are aware that you have it and know what to do in case you do have a breathing difficulty episode while you're running. And she played multiple sports. You know, she was a basketball player. She did track. So she handled it well. She knew what to do. So with those two different episodes coming from I don't know what to do or and I know what to do, it's very different. You have to be very well prepared when those situations occur.
All right. Very good.
Okay.
We advance.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Go to the next one. Again. So again, there are some YouTube videos and the slideshow talking about some of the things that Myra's talking about. And feel free to check those out, but we're just not going to show them here.
Okay, so like I mentioned earlier, what to keep looking for, you know, having the difficulty breathing in rather than out, having dry cough, and basically not responding to your asthma medication. So if none of that medication is working and you know what other symptoms are there, that's when you need to take that extra step. Go ahead, next slide. So I have a chart that I also put together on differentiating between PVCD and asthma. With exercise-induced asthma, typically it peaks anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes after exercises, and it begins and resolves within anywhere from 30 to 60 minutes with continuous exercise. Athletes with asthma are unable to catch their breath, and they pant effectively. Those who have PVCD are often situation-dependent, and they may begin and end irreparably. So it's from those incidents where they're having difficulty breathing, and it starts and then it ends rapidly with their breathing patterns. Athletes also may describe that there are throat tightness or even choking. So the chart that I have, basically just what I mentioned, is just to be aware of symptoms of, you know, exercise-induced asthma. They're going to have more of chest expiration and wheezing versus PVCD. They're going to have more of a throat tightness, and also along with that stridor, not wheezing, but more of that stridor. And with the treatment, you know, all athletes with exercise-induced asthma, they're going to have asthma medication, and it is going to work. So for those who have VCD, asthma medication is not going to work. So the research has found that the breathing patterns are what's going to help them. And I have an exercise, a breathing exercise that I use, and it's called pursed lip exercise. So what you do is basically you purse your lips like if you were whistling, but you're going to breathe in the nose and out the mouth. So you're breathing in slowly, and then with pursed lips, you're going to breathe out. And you want to do that 10 times, controlling the breathing. So when you have an episode, just remember pursed lip breathing pattern. And that's going to, you know, help them calm down. It's going to help them relax in the throat, neck, and shoulders.
All right, so on that, it didn't look like you took a very deep breath. Usually if you're thinking calming breaths, you tell people to take deep calming breaths. Is that just a whatever breath you can take in through the nose?
At the time, yes. You want to start slow, because if you're having that difficulty breathing in, you want to just take slow breaths and work your way up to deep breaths. So hopefully by the 10th breath that you take, you're able to do the deep breath.
All right.
Okay. So management of PVCD basically is going through these breathing patterns. What I mean by patterns is the breathing exercises and not having so much physical and emotional stress, because research has shown that, you know, like I mentioned earlier, stress, anxiety is going to have a huge factor in your breathing. So with those damaged vocal cords, you want to be able to strengthen those vocal cords and the muscles surrounding those vocal cords by, you know, controlling your breathing and you're having those exercises and not having so much of that stress-related emotions on you. So with that being said, of course, you know, when you have your exercise-induced asthma kids, their management is their medication. You know, if they're having an episode, refrain them from activities. Vocal cord dysfunction athlete, they're going to know that they're not breathing properly, so they're going to step aside and they're going to input that exercise that they're recommended to do. So there's a series of exercises for that. I just mentioned one, but there are more.
What are the chances that someone has both?
Yes, there has been athletes that are diagnosed with both. And with that being said, I mean, you're going to have all these tests done, you know, trying to rule out one or the other or having both. Basically, you know, you're going to have difficulty breathing in and out versus just in and out. So at that point, you just want to make sure you refrain them from that excessive exercise that plays a huge demand on your body. Like, so for example, if you're sprinting, and they know they can't sprint for a very long time because their asthma takes in place anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes of your exercise. So you're going to pull them aside and make sure, one, they take their asthma medication and do their breathing exercise at the same time. So, yeah, there's been some cases with that situation. That's a good question. Okay.
So can I ask you a question?
Yes.
So once the athlete's been diagnosed and given these breathing exercises and they do it on a regular basis, do you see a significant decrease in having an episode when they are exercising?
Yes, I do. Because I've had an athlete who was just, you know, she just had asthma. But at times I kind of thought that she did have some vocal cord damage as well. So we would have them refrain from a lot of activity, and I would go ahead and say, do these breathing patterns, and let's see if that helps you out. So one, yes, it calmed the athlete down after she had the medication as well. So knowing those symptoms early on and already implementing those exercises really helped the athlete more focus on themselves, learning how to manage their breathing difficulties when activities. So I think that does play a huge role. I do have some a diagram of the vocal cords, of how they open and how they close. When you do have some damage, you're going to have some swelling around the throat. So that's going to cause to push the vocal cords to close in. So if you have a chance, you can Google that so that you can be a little bit more familiar with how it's shown when it's open and when it's closed and when there is damage to your vocal cords. Yeah. Go ahead, you can skip that one. So athletic trainers, we're experts. You know, we know when to be aware of all the symptoms that happen with an exercise-induced asthma athlete. Now that we're a little bit more familiar with vocal cord dysfunction symptoms, we can relate the two. So that's when we play a huge role in knowing when to refer the athlete to the proper physician. If there is an issue with insurance, then yeah, you can try to continue to refer to somebody else other than just an ENT. But also to encourage the therapy that's involved too. You know, these breathing exercises play a huge role in that as well. I know there's also speech therapy that's been brought up in research. So if you have access to a speech therapist, go for it. You know, recommend them to them as well, and they can start training them on how to correct their sounds and, you know, focus on the throat and their breathing patterns. So I think that would play a huge role in that as well.
Mara, do you know if Manville ISD has a speech therapist employed by the district?
I don't think so.
Kathy, no. Do you know?
I would think that there probably is one in most school districts. I don't know for sure, but every district that I've been in has speech therapy available. Now, they may not work for the district. They may be contract. Mm-hmm. And they may, you know, they're available for the ones that you know, are needed within the district. So I think that'd be a question for the counselors. Find out, you know, when the speech counselor, speech therapist is on campus and but every district that I've worked in had a speech therapist that was available.
That's what I was just kind of wondering, if the speech therapist would treat an athlete rather than somebody who is stuttering or having trouble speaking.
I think that they probably work like the physical therapists that are within the district, and it's probably based on orders from a physician. I think that they work on prescription only, but this is kind of out of my realm of expertise. So I think that would be a question that would, you know, fall to the administrator. But we could probably check, at least in our district here,
as far as out that,
right. Something we could follow up on.
Yeah, just be interesting to know.
Sure.
So.
Well, that basically concludes my talk. If there's any other questions that are out there that we can go over. But basically, it's just knowing the differences between the two and being familiar with, you know, Strider. When I first heard it on that athlete, I didn't know what to think. You know, it's a different sound that we don't hear on a regular basis. So knowing that Strider's plays a huge role in those symptoms. You know, if you catch it early right away, you'll know what to do.
My question, and I thought that you had mentioned one time that there may be an emotional component mm-hmm. to this. How does that figure into the, you know, seeing the ENT or the PCP? Does that fall under the counseling part of this?
It does. With the athlete that I had first in 2009, she played she had so many stresses in her life. I mean, she was 15 years old, single parent home. She had to work. She was running very, very competitive. So all these demands on her were very stressful, school and at home. So I did end up referring her to a counselor at the end, only because we had already figured out, you know, her health issues as far as, you know, vocal cord dysfunction. I wanted her to be referred to counseling because all this stress related also plays a huge impact on your breathing patterns. You can have an anxiety attack anywhere, anytime.
What would have happened had you have not been persistent?
She would have probably dropped out of athletics and been stressed all her life and had this breathing difficulty not knowing that she had a vocal cord. She would have just dealt with having asthma and her medication not working. She would have dropped out. But I was very persistent only because I wanted to help her and I wanted to figure out what was wrong and what I needed to do. I wanted to take action. So I know it was a lengthy process with her. Because of one, insurance, and two, she was having so many breathing episodes that were frustrating her. So I felt the need that I needed to take that step forward and say, let's figure this out together. And I'm glad I did, because now I'm very alert to other athletes now who are having difficulty breathing after a sport. And I'll ask them, like, okay, you have asthma. Does your medication work? Have you noticed any differences in your medication? Does it work? If it doesn't work, let's try these breathing patterns first to try to calm them down.
In your research, did you find that this the onset of this is more of a physical, genetic, or is it more of an emotional that brings on this disorder?
I think it's emotional and physical.
Okay.
Having research, reading through research is, having the stress-related, anxiety, it all plays a huge role. If you're having an anxiety attack, you're going to have difficulty breathing and to the point where you can pass out. So you want to catch it early on. So I think emotion and physical both play a huge role in this.
That just gives all of us caretakers in the field a little bit better idea of who to look for.
Yeah, when I tweeted it out, Rachel Blakeman, she's out in California. She said in 1999 she was working with the Olympic Training Center and one of the athletes had it there. And I was like, I never even heard of it until you presented it to us in August. And, you know, and you presented it there and I paid attention, but I didn't even think about how I can ask those kids that are using an inhaler, mm-hmm. Hey, is your inhaler working? Mm-hmm. Instead, they're like, yeah. I have asthma. Okay, well, do you have your inhaler? So yeah. even just hearing it again, I'm like, well, let me just check, let me go one step. Is that working for you? Is that working for you?
Well, especially in the area that we live in. You know, we're living here on the Gulf Coast, and, you know, the air quality at times cannot be ideal. You know, we also have ozone situations in the fall and in the spring. So, that you know, sometimes the easy answer is an asthma inhaler. Well, it could be underlying as well. So this is an awesome presentation, and I appreciate you doing the research initially to bring it to us. And now, you know, we've spread the word.
Yeah, there's always going to be one or two athletes. Mm-hmm. So just had to be very familiar with the symptoms and be aware. So now that, you know, you can feel comfortable with that, and you can take action.
Right.
Do you have anywhere specific that you would recommend people looking to learn more? Obviously, we have your PowerPoint, again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/PVCD. That'll have the PowerPoint, and you have a whole list of references in there.
There's a lot of literature that I read over, so feel free to look up any of the authors that I've listed on there and look them up by article and just read. There's a lot out there. So I basically just, you know, put everything in together because it basically says the same thing. That literature is really important to be up to date as well.
Gotcha. And then, how important or how beneficial was an affiliation with a hospital in getting this process done? Like, were you able to easily call a doctor and say, hey, what else is going on? Or like, were you able to call a coworker, you know, just, if someone's dealing with this, then how did that work out for you?
Early on?
Yeah. Besides, I know you said you sent the kid to the doctor and said, mm-hmm. Hey, that's not working, but did you talk to anybody else about it during the process?
No. I, as far as a healthcare professional, I didn't. I was just communicating with the parent and the athlete, and I just started researching. I started looking up what it could be, what symptoms, what else can you do if you have an asthmatic child. So I just started doing research. And, working for Christ of St. John at the time, I knew many, medical doctors. And I've always called Kathy because she knows everybody. She knows everybody from podiatrists, ophthalmologists, OBGYNs, everybody in the Clear Lake area. So, but I just didn't think to call her. So I just went straight to, it's word of mouth. There was a parent who's like, hey, I know an ENT who she can see. And I'm like, well, that's a step. So I took that step.
All right. So again, I guess a short lesson there is if you have a question, now we have Twitter people or that secondary school Facebook group on, obviously Facebook group. So the secondary school athletic trainers Facebook group is really beneficial because I see all the time people saying, hey, here's this, what do you think? And then 10 different answers. Have you checked this? It could be this. So again, definitely check that out, you know, or find that community. And so you're not doing it alone.
Right. I would say that, since we work for our Methodist, it is a little bit easier now because we have more specialties in the Clear Lake area. We didn't have before when we were Christus. That makes it a little bit easier. But, we are very blessed to be in Houston, where we have a world-renowned medical center that's available to anybody, doesn't matter who you work for. So that is very helpful to athletic trainers and just the general public, that we can seek answers and get, some of the world's finest physicians that are available to everybody. So
true.
All right. I believe that is what I've got. Myra, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do that?
They can email me direct, mareed@HoustonMethodist.org.
R-E-E-D.
Correct.
So mareed. So mareed@
HoustonMethodist.org.
All right. Kathy, I know you're on Twitter.
I am. I'm not quite as good at it as you are, Jeremy. I may need some lessons.
Well, everybody's got to start somewhere. So on Twitter, Kathy, you are?
I believe it is C. Shupak at Twitter. You probably know better than I do.
Yeah, so it'd just be at C. Shupak.
Yeah, correct.
Right, then if someone wants to get a hold of you some other way.
Yes, my email is cshupak@HoustonMethodist.org.
All right, so it's at Kathy. S-U-P-A-K.
There
so
you go.
Kathy Shupak.
There you are, Kathy.
Yeah, I am.
I don't even have Twitter.
There you go.
There
you go. All right. So if you want to hit up Kathy there or email Kathy or Myra about PVCD, or obviously you can check out the show notes. This is, again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/PVCD, PVCD, and then check that out. So as we were talking about cross-country runners, kids need to stay hydrated, you can check out my friend Robbie with Free Hydration. He is a big supporter of the podcast, so Free Hydration, hit them up, and you can get some good discounts by telling them I sent you over from the Sports Medicine Broadcast. So, Myra, do you think that heat or hydration plays a part in that at all, in the vocal cords?
No. I don't think.
I was just wondering, because,
so,
like you said, sometimes they get the cotton mouth or the dry mouth from the troubled breathing. But I was just wondering if anything other than the breathing exercises helps or really affects it. No?
I didn't read any of that in the research.
All right. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/PVCD. I am Mr. Jeremy Jackson on Twitter. And for Jeremy, the Sports Medicine One Kids, Myra Reed out at Manville High School, Houston Methodist, and Kathy Shupa, Houston Methodist, now here at Pasadena ISD. That is a wrap.